Welcome to Paddling the Blue. With each episode, we talk with guests from the Great Lakes and around the globe who are doing cool things related to sea kayaking. I'm your host, my name is John Chase, and let's get started paddling the blue. Welcome to today's episode of Paddling the Blue. Today's episode comes to you from the 29th Annual Quiet Adventures Symposium in Lansing, Michigan. And Quiet Adventures is a little different from what we normally think of when we hear symposium. When we hear symposium, we often think on-water education and experiences. And this one is more like a trade show with a Great Lakes emphasis. But even if you're not from Michigan or not from the USA, I'm certain that you'll find value in hearing from today's guests. We've got a wide range of guests today, including representatives from the Verlin Kruger Legacy, Kayak USA, Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary, Woods and Waters Adventures, Kayak Ontario, and Naturally Superior Adventures, and of course, we'll talk to somebody from the Quiet Adventures Symposium Group as well. All of these organizations are working hard to educate and excite paddlers, protect our waterways, and keep our Great Lakes great. If you're not already a subscriber to OnlineSeaKayaking.com, you're missing out on some great content and a growing community. Visit OnlineSeaKayaking.com, use the coupon code PTBPODCAST at checkout, and you'll get 10% off up to 12 months of your subscription investment. Remote recordings are a unique environment, so be prepared to go from silence like we have right now to a full arena, full of people, and all its background noise. So you may need to adjust your volume in just a couple of seconds. And with that, enjoy today's episode from the Quiet Adventures Symposium. I'm here with Andrea Graham from the Verlin Kruger Legacy. Hello, Andrea.
Hello.
So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so tell us, who was Verlin Kruger?
Well, when I first describe who Verlin Kruger is, I always start out with, well, he's my grandfather.
All right.
I am one of 45 of his grandchildren.
Wow.
My grandfather was known very well in the paddling community. He loved to paddle canoes. He was a boat builder, and he went on some really fantastic trips. In his lifetime, he paddled over 100,000 miles, and he never started paddling until he was 41 years old.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Tell us about some of the trips. I mean, what's the scale of these trips?
So there's three trips that we really like to highlight because they just seem to be the most impressive. The first one was in 1971. It was called the Cross Continent Canoe Safari, and he did this trip with Clint Waddell. They did the they paddled the entire fur trader route in one season. It took them 176 days, and it was documented by Phil Pemberton, who videoed it, and it's a documentary called Never Before, Never Again.
But yet he did more after that.
And then he did more. So then in 1980, he planned and paddled a trip with Steve Landick, and they called this trip the Ultimate Canoe Challenge. And the Ultimate Canoe Challenge was a 3.5 year, 28,000 mile trip that went all across North America. And some of the most fascinating things about this trip is they paddled the entire length of the Colorado River upstream. And then they also paddled the entire length of the Mississippi River upstream.
So why would you do that?
I think he'd love to challenge himself.
So 3.5 years, 28,000 miles. Is that continuous?
They did plan a break in the middle of that trip. It was a planned break for about 4 or 5 months from the way I understand it. But other than that, they were paddling and portaging that entire time. And they did all of that without any help. It was all on foot or paddling in the water.
So all self-supported.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yes. So then the third trip that we always like to highlight is the Two Continent Canoe Expedition, and he completed that trip with Valerie Fons. That was in the later 1980s. They paddled that trip from the Arctic to Cape Horn, South America, and that also took them about 3 years. When they reached Cape Horn, South America, the following day, he actually paddled the 10-mile solo route around the South Island to earn the Cape Horn certificate. And if you know anything about the Cape Horn, it is treacherous waters.
Yeah. And I mean, you can't go that far and not do that, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're there already.
You've already done, how many miles was that one?
21,000.
21,000. Yeah, can't go 21,000 miles and skip the last 10 and not get the certificate.
Right. Right.
All right, now how long did he paddle?
About 40 years.
Okay. There's somebody, I'd heard a story about celebrating his 80th birthday on one of these long trips.
Yes. So that was definitely an amazing trip for him. On his 80th birthday, he planned a trip for the entire length of the Yukon River. He took my grandma Jenny with him and they catamaran their canoes together. He called that a float trip because it was an easy trip. There were no hard portages. It was not a hard paddle. It was just a leisurely trip, but he invited friends and anybody who bought a Kruger canoe from him in the past. He invited a big group of people, and I wish I knew the number of people that finished that trip with them, but it was a handful, like 20 or so people finished with them.
So Kruger canoes. So he made, he designed and built a lot of canoes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. One of his first canoes that he designed was called the Loon. He also then designed a Monarch, which he sold that design to Mad River Canoe Company. And then he went on and redesigned. He thought about the Loon and the Monarch and redesigned it into the Sea Wind. And then he spent the rest of his life basically building the Sea Wind canoe. It was just the best of all the models wrapped up into one.
So most of these trips, were they done in boats that he built and designed himself?
Yes. Every trip that he did, they were in boats that he designed and built himself. So the cross-continent trip in 1971 was in a wood strip canoe. The Ultimate Canoe Challenge with Steve Landick was in what was called a Loon. And then the two-continent trip, he was in a Sea Wind, and it was one of his first models.
All right. Now, you have a project to honor his legacy. Tell us a little bit about that project.
So after my grandfather passed away, we had people approach our family and say, what are you going to do with all these amazing things of his? You should put it in a museum. So there was a group in Roscommon called the Osabo River Center, and they offered to put his items on display. And we ended up, the family put together a collection, and we placed it there at that river center, and it was there for 15 years. We recently had to pull the collection, and it's currently in storage. And since it was in storage, we had to think about, well, what do we want to do with this collection now? And that's where Verlin Kruger Legacy was formed. So our family decided to create a nonprofit. We're in the middle of seeking federal nonprofit status. We would like to create a mobile museum, so to speak, with like a trailer that would have those three canoes in it and some of his other very notable items from his trips. And then we can take those to paddling events in different locations throughout Michigan just to share with others his inspiring life.
So for those who are not in Michigan, or not in the Midwest for that matter, how could they learn more about Verlin Kruger and his legacy in some of these trips?
I would love for them to visit our website. It's KrugerLegacy.com.
All right. And there's a book as well.
Yes, there is. The book is called All Things Are Possible, The Verlin Kruger Story, 100,000 Miles by Canoe. And that was written by Phil Peterson. Phil sat down with my grandfather, went through thousands of photos. And it was, of course, very late in my grandfather's life. He was battling cancer and not well. But Phil was able to put together this beautiful book with many photos in it. And it chronicles his entire life.
Can you get that book at VerlinKrugerLegacy.com?
Soon. Soon you will be able to get that book from us.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for continuing to honor that legacy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I'm joined by Tony Pescuzzi from Kayak USA. So how are you today, Tony?
Hello. How are you?
Excellent.
Good
excellent.
To be here.
So you spell kayak a little different than I spell kayak.
We do. We spell it Q-A-J-A-Q, which is the traditional Greenlandic way.
All right. So tell us a little bit about Kayak USA.
So Kayak USA is the American chapter of Kayak Katufiak. I'm sure I'm butchering that. It's the Greenland Kayak Association.
Okay.
So there are several events held throughout the United States, and kayak training camp up in Frankfort, Michigan is one of approximately seven events.
Okay. So Kayak USA, what is its function?
The function is we are a nonprofit. So it's basically we're committed to supporting the parent club, if you will, from Greenland. So we're trying to preserve, study, promote the Greenland traditions and techniques. So we do a lot of skills training, rolling, Greenland ropes, rescues, strokes. It's basically a good opportunity for people to get together, learn more about kayak safety, and improve their paddling skills.
Okay.
So now you run this event, Kayak TC. There's other events that your chapter runs as well?
Not necessarily our chapter, but there's the Hudson River Gathering. There is Delmarva. There's a traditional paddlers gathering down in Florida. There may still be one in South Carolina, which is TIPS. And then there was also one South Sound in Washington State.
And so Kayak TC, tell us a little bit about Kayak TC.
So Kayak TC or Kayak Training Camp or Michigan Training Camp has been around for, I've been going since 2015. And it's held at Camp Lookout. It's sort of an all-inclusive, if you will. So you paddle over to the camp. You can also have your gear shuttled over on a pontoon boat. Your meals are included. You stay in cabins. We have excellent mentors. Dubside is a typical mentor. Tim Galloway is also one of our excellent mentors. We have a lot of local mentors as well as regional and international members as well. Occasionally we'll have mentors come over from Greenland.
Okay. Now, how wide of an area does the event itself draw from in terms of participants?
We get folks from really all over the country. 2 years ago, we had a large group of participants from Toronto. We also have had folks from the Southeast. We usually get a couple folks from the West Coast as well. But it's primarily, the majority of the people do come from the Midwest.
Okay. And what types of things might someone find at the event?
So we have on-water instruction pretty much all day, every day. We have ropes demonstration. It is a, pardon the pun, a very fluid type of learning environment. So people can come and work on whatever you would like to work on. If you're working on a forward finish roll, an aft finish roll, anything in between, if you want to be able to take a more, have a strokes class, we do strokes, harpoon events. Like I said, there is a ropes demonstration. You can also sign up to do the ropes, or if you just want to hang out and just watch and just enjoy the environment. It's a beautiful area.
Okay, so what's with the ropes? Tell us about the ropes.
So the ropes, the Greenland ropes, they have high ropes and low ropes, and it's basically very similar to rolling your kayak. They would typically do it when the water is either frozen or too cold to get out there and roll comfortably. And now it's kind of evolved into a whole competition. People do it in the wintertime to stay in shape, and the movements closely mimic the rolls.
Interesting.
Yeah. Right. Pretty cool.
So a couple of really important questions here. So first, is this event, is it only open to expert Greenland paddlers?
No. Everybody from absolute beginner, people that have never, ever been in a kayak of any type, to everything to expert or, like I said, anything in between.
And do you have to have a beard?
It's highly encouraged, but no, it's not required.
Right. that would just cut me out right there. I can't grow a beard, so it just doesn't seem to work for me.
I'm out as well.
All right. And this is a really important question. Is there a beard contest at the event?
There hasn't been thus far, but I think we should have one this year.
I think that sounds like a good option.
Absolutely.
All right. Tony, where can someone learn more about Kayak TC and Kayak USA?
You can go to the website, kayakusa.org, so that's kayakusa.org, or you can go to Kayak TC, spelled the same way, kayaktc.org. It has a lot of information there. If you go to the Kayak USA website, it also has links to all of the other Kayak USA events, like the Hergif, Delmarva, the South Sound,
okay,
all the other ones.
And when is kayak training camp this year, 2024?
This year's training camp is going to be August 22nd through the 25th.
All right. And for those who can't make it this year, is it usually around the same time every year?
It's always, usually, almost always in August, usually toward the latter, mid to latter half of August.
All right. And how about the instructor to mentor ratio?
We typically have about 15 to 17 mentors, and we cap the overall at about 65.
Okay.
Total.
All right.
So very low mentor to a student ratio.
Yeah, 1-4. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Tony, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. Now I'm joined by Stephanie Gandula, and Stephanie is with the Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Is that right?
That's right, John.
All right. So tell us, what is the Thunder Bay? Well, first of all, where is the Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary?
Great question. So we are essentially in the heart of the Great Lakes. So if you think about Michigan as the Mitten State, we're up in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan. So to even a little more detail, if you know where the Straits of Mackinac are, we're a couple hours south on the northeast side of Michigan.
Okay. So for those not from Michigan or not familiar with the Michigan, you mentioned the Mitten State. Here in Michigan, we refer to ourselves as the Mitten State because our state is shaped like a hand. But this is on Lake Huron.
That's right. It's on Lake Huron. In fact, our headquarters are in a little town called Alpena in northeast Michigan. But the sanctuary itself is 4,300 square miles of northwestern Lake Huron.
Yeah, tell us about the sanctuary itself.
Yes. So we are part of a national system. So think about national parks, but underwater. And this system protects over 620,000 square miles of our country's special places underwater. So things like natural resources, like coral reefs and deep sea canyons, saltwater domes, but also cultural resources, like the shipwrecks that Thunder Bay was designated to protect.
And how many shipwrecks are in the Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary?
That's one of my favorite questions, because there's a whole bunch. In fact, we have identified 100 shipwrecks within the sanctuary boundaries, and we estimate there's at least that many more yet to be found.
Wow. And that's a 4,300 square mile area.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right.
That's right. And it encompasses three counties. So it's a pretty vast area of Lake Huron.
All right. And I know 4,300 square miles sounds like a lot of territory, but that's not that much territory. And that's a lot of shipwrecks to have gone down in that particular area. And you said that's the number that are known. There's probably double that are out there. What was it that made that area so treacherous that there were that many shipwrecks that went down?
Well, there's quite a few factors that contribute to that concentration of shipwrecks in that area. Of course, weather. I mean, you've paddled in the Great Lakes, and so you know that weather can pop up suddenly. There can be a terrible fog, terrible storms, but there's a concentration, a meeting of some weather systems right in Thunder Bay. It almost creates its own weather. So weather is a big factor. And then high traffic. It is interesting. You look out to the beautiful Lake Huron on a day like today, and you might see just the water and no vessels. But if you think 1870, 1880, looking out into that waterscape, you would see maybe 20 schooners and 10 steamers. So it was a busy, busy waterway. It still is a busy waterway, I like to remind folks, because it's just that what a huge freighter that you see today, what that could haul, it would take 200 schooners to haul.
Okay.
So we've got weather, we've got high traffic, which leads to collisions, and then we also have shallow shoals. So like deep, you know, or not deep, but shallow, rocky bottoms that are perfect for ripping apart a ship's hull, whether it's a wooden hull or a steel hull. So three factors that contribute to all those shipwrecks.
So that's interesting. You mentioned, you know, today in the Great Lakes, we're used to Great Lakes freighters that could be 1,000 feet long, but you needed 200 boats at that time. So that kind of gives some scale to why there's so many boats that went down.
Exactly.
Area.
And it also is a good reminder of how important the Great Lakes are, of course, as a natural resource for the planet, but also as to our global economy. There's millions and millions of dollars being transported efficiently via water in the Great Lakes.
Certainly. And that threads all the way through to the Mississippi and on down from there.
That's right.
All right. So the Great Lakes shipwrecks, they're pretty well preserved.
They are. In fact, the vessels especially the deep ones, have their masts still standing upright about 90 feet in the water column. So this cold, fresh water is perfect for preserving these shipwrecks. You wouldn't have a wooden shipwreck 150 years old that well preserved in the ocean, because you have organisms that would eat the wood, and also the warmer water and the salt water to corrode the metal. So it's a really, really well-preserved shipwreck. So a lot of them look like you could hoist them out of the water, set sail and carry on. People do travel from all over the world because of the preservation of these amazing sites.
So can you dive to those?
You can.
Okay.
That's another awesome thing about the National Marine Sanctuary. We have wrecks that are super, super deep, hundreds of feet deep. And then we have everything in between, all the way up to beach wrecks. So it's really an accessible archaeological collection. You can connect with this these sites. One of my favorite activities, of course, is paddling to the shallow shipwrecks.
So with that in mind, you can paddle to some of the shipwrecks and you can see them, still see the shipwrecks as well.
Absolutely. Remember, I said the cold, fresh, clear water. I don't know if I said clear yet, but because of our invasive mussels here in the Great Lakes, the zebra and the quagga, they have really cleared the water column, and you can be paddling over a 5 foot deep, a 10 foot deep, even a 15 foot deep wreck, and just look over the side and see the remains of a wooden schooner, a wooden freighter.
Now, there are some important factors to consider in terms of, you know, we mentioned diving as an example, in preserving those shipwrecks. So tell us how we make sure that we as guests in the National Marine Sanctuary would make sure that we preserve those shipwrecks.
Absolutely. So the Marine Sanctuary is co-managed by the state of Michigan and NOAA and the federal government. And so we work hard to protect shipwrecks within that 4,300 square miles by our education and outreach programs. And so that's where we're able to, especially, you know, at a show like where we're at today, where we're able to talk to people and educate them on the laws protecting these shipwrecks. So it's against the law, of course, to disturb an archaeological site. So you take only pictures, leave only bubbles. And so that's what we ask of anybody visiting these shipwrecks, whether they're paddling or scuba diving.
Is there a map of the shipwrecks?
Oh, yes. We have an awesome map at thunderbay.noaa.gov. So that's NOAA.gov. And that is our website where you'll see our mooring buoy map and also the full shipwreck map. And it's an interactive map, so you could see the location, you can learn a little bit about the history, and then you can learn how to actually get to those shipwreck sites.
Oh, I see. I'm a complete geek for this kind of stuff. So I will definitely tonight be poring over the shipwreck map and have a chance to get out there as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Look for that mooring buoy map as well, because we maintain mooring buoys on 52 shipwreck sites. So when you're paddling out to a site, it's super easy then to find the shipwreck. And there's taglines that you can tie up your kayak, your stand-up paddleboard, whatever it might be. And if you decide to take a dip in chilly Lake Huron, you can do that as well.
All right. Snorkel and yep. Kind of see what's going on. Mm-hmm. All right. So thunderbay.noaa, NOAA.gov.
That's right. And see us on Facebook as well, Thunder Bay Shipwrecks, because we're always posting lots of fascinating shipwreck stories and really cool underwater imagery.
Well, that sounds exciting. We'll make sure we put links to all those resources on the show notes. And Stephanie, I appreciate you joining me today.
Thanks so much, John.
Thank you. I'm joined by Colin Tarr. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Colin is with the Quiet Adventures Society, and we are at the Quiet Adventures Symposium. Society puts on the symposium, so tell us a little bit about the society.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are the Quiet Adventures Society. We rebranded our name from the Quiet Waters Society in 2020 in an effort to be more inclusive of all the different outdoor non-motorized sports that there are, biking, climbing, camping, you name it. Prior to that, we were the Quiet Waters Society, and we were founded in 1996 and have been putting on the symposium ever since. It's a place for people from all different outdoor backgrounds to come, meet people who do the same things as you, who do extremely different things, but are all taking part in sharing our outdoor spaces, outdoor communities. I myself have made countless connections and friends through this exact event every year. And so it's a really special place to come, learn a bunch of stuff, experience a bunch of stuff, maybe win some stuff too. So
1996, this has been running since 1996.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long time to run the symposium.
29 years this year, 30, the big 3-0 next year.
Wow. Congratulations on a great run, and look forward to many more years. So you mentioned they rebranded from Quiet Water to Quiet Adventures, and you certainly have a wide breadth of providers here. So tell us a little bit about how some of these come together.
Yeah, so it was a group of paddlers in the Lansing area. I believe it was about 12 folks who started the group out, started the event out. It's always been volunteer run. It is still volunteer run 100% to this day. None of us make any money off of it. Anything we make on the event, we pour right back into the event next year. Most of that goes to things like facility fees and stuff like that. But yeah, it's been going super, super strong. And there's, like you said, just a breadth of people here. There's so many different backgrounds. And thankfully, you know, right before COVID-19 hit, We made the decision to expand, and that almost certainly is what helped us survive COVID-19 as an organization, as a nonprofit. And having groups here like MSU Bikes and local bike co-ops and Michigan DNR, and I could go on and on, all of them are contributing to making this a space for everyone and making this a space where there's something for everyone.
Yeah. And when paddlers think of symposiums, generally they're thinking of an event that is instruction-focused, education-focused, trips and that sort of thing. And there's certainly some of that here, but we're not actually on water or not actually performing the events or the activities. We're just learning about those. But one of the other interesting things about this event is that you have a lot of conservation-minded groups here.
Yeah, Michigan's a really special spot. I mean, we have an immense amount of public lands, perhaps not so much as some of those western states, but public lands that are actively used by a huge amount of the populace. We have 4 out of the 5 Great Lakes touching us, an immense amount of pristine waterways. And so it only makes sense that, you know, a state that too has had its fair share of industry throughout the centuries, that there are now groups today who are dedicated to maintaining these riverways for recreation, taking the time to paddle down them, pull debris. They're some of the most active advocacy groups based in the greater Lansing area that are now touching cities that like Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids, Mount Pleasant, all over the state, trying to expand these conservation efforts. And having that many groups, there's always space for conservation groups, right?
Yeah.
No one's working against each other.
Right.
We're all working towards the same goal. And so having all these different approaches and all these different types of terrain, water, trail, you name it, it ultimately allows us to have a really kind of overarching approach to address pollution problems and debris problems and things like that.
Well, thank you very much for putting the event on, for bringing all these groups together and making a difference in the paddling community.
Yeah, I'm happy you guys are able to come out. I mean, the event happens because of folks like you, and so we hope you come back next year, and we hope you tell your friends, and we just keep making it bigger and better.
Absolutely. So where can listeners learn more about the Quiet Adventures Society and the symposium?
Yeah, so you can find our website at quietadventures.org, or you can follow us on social media at Quiet Adventures Society. Pretty active on Facebook and Instagram. There is a Facebook group dedicated specifically to the symposium. So if you connect with us in any of those spaces, you'll be able to find out more about our history, what we're doing, efforts we're making right now, and next year's symposium.
Super. Colin, thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep. All right, my next guest is Sue Bacala, and Sue is with Woods and Waters in the Leschenaux Islands area of the Great Lakes. So Sue, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the Leschenaux.
So the Leschenaux Islands are in the northern Lake Huron, and we are about a half hour from the St. Ignace area. A lot of people know Mackinac Island, and we really aren't very far from there. And the Leschenaux is, there's 36 islands that are just off the southern shore of the Upper Peninsula, and we are in the eastern UP.
All right, so we have a lot of listeners from around the world. And so when we talk about this, let's make sure we, the UP is the Upper Peninsula. So Michigan is divided into two different peninsulas. There's a Lower Peninsula and an Upper Peninsula that are separated by the Straits of Mackinac.
Mm-hmm.
5-mile suspension bridge that goes between those two. So just kind of set that stage for everybody. Tell us a little bit about the islands themselves and what makes that area a paddler's paradise.
So part of it is it's fresh water, so we don't have things that are going to eat you or sting you. So
oh,
that part is totally awesome. But the Leschenaux Islands themselves, it gives us a lot of variety of paddling. And the islands are different sizes, different shapes. Some of them are small. Some of them are quite large. But because of that, we have both protected and open water. So for some people that are looking to, you know, they're kayak curious, it's a great place to come because it's relatively, you know, low risk, you know, where they can start to understand paddling, improving their skills without being exposed to really rough weather or extreme wind. You can almost always find a lee to go paddle in. But when you kind of begin your skills to become a little bit more of adventurous of paddler, well, then you can start going out into the outside of the islands.
All right. Now, what kind of landscape might one find in the islands?
So the Upper Great Lakes as a whole and the lot of the Eastern Upper Peninsula is very much of cedar-lined rocky shores. So we have a lot of limestone in the area and then a lot of cedar trees. So the scenery, you know, it's that, it's not quite boreal forest, but it definitely isn't like giant towering white pines. You know, cedar trees are known as kind of a swamp tree. They're very happy to have wet roots and things like that. And in some ways, once the deer start chewing on them, they end up looking very Dr. Seussical, that you can see their stems and then you'll have this random bulb of a tree on top. And then you have the rocky shorelines with the Great Lakes.
All right. Now, what kind of wildlife adventures might someone find there?
So it is a paradise for people that are interested in birding in general. So we have lots of different waterfowl that do migrate through the area. Some of them are, you know, there year round, but a lot of different birds come through. A lot of raptors, bald eagles, osprey, and then say a whole smattering of songbirds and warblers.
And it's a pretty unpopulated area for the most part, right?
It is. The Upper Peninsula as a whole is not a population mecca. The Clark Township, which is where the Leshano are, have about 1,100 year-round residents. And then in the summertime, there's a lot of summer cottages, though. And so the area swells to about 5,000. But if you compare that to other parts of the world, it is a tiny drop in the bucket in terms of population.
Yeah. Now, when you're out on the water there, does it feel remote?
Parts of the time it can, but it depends on where you're at in the island. Some areas are more remote feeling, and then other areas, you know, you may see more cottages or some motorized boat traffic. And what's interesting about the Leshano, the very first Chris-Craft dealer was in Hessel, Michigan. And for those who don't know, Chris-Craft is one of the very early wooden boats. And there are lots and lots and lots of antique wooden boats that are still used by their owners. And they park them in their boathouses, which are like garages that are right on the water. So we kind of share the waters with these really cool, you know, floating pieces of history.
And there's a wooden boat festival up there, isn't there?
There is. The second Saturday of August is the Antique Wooden Boat Show.
Do you find both power craft as well as paddle craft coming to that?
Yes, actually, there are. Even though it's known as the Antique Wooden Boat Show and people always think of, you know, the power boats, there is always a display of handmade kayaks and rowboats and dinghies, sailboats and things like that that's not all motorized.
All right. Sounds super cool. Now tell us a little bit about Woods and Waters.
Woods and Waters, we are a very small little shop located in the Leshano area. We do guided kayaking tours, and we are primarily use P&H brand sea kayaks. So we are using true touring sea kayaks, which a lot of people have never had the opportunity to use. And we do both guided tours. We do some kayak rentals. We also do overnight trips, women-only trips. We do lessons, and we do lessons on what people's schedule is so they don't have to always come for, you know, a particular date. And we can help people come, you know, learn how to paddle, improve their skills. So we also do bike rentals, bike repair, and we're kind of like a tiny little outfitter because we know a lot of people can't always find that type of gear where we're located because it is a smaller population area.
Well, fine choice on the P&H boats, I must say.
I noticed your shirt.
You specialize in lodge-based trips for your multi-day programs, is that right?
Yes. So the ones that we're running, the Women on the Water, which we call WOW, and then we're also starting this year a couples kayaking weekend. We are utilizing, most of the property is part of an old resort. So that whole area of the Leshano was very early in terms of a vacation destination for people. And so this is an old resort that has kind of has a couple of the old properties. And so we have like a bunkhouse and we have a cozy cabin. And so we're doing like lodge based so people don't have to camp. I like camping, but sometimes you don't always want to. And then we're working with a local chef. She graduated from the Leshano Culinary School because there also is a culinary school that happens to be in Hessel that runs as a school during the kind of traditional academic year. And then they operate a farm-to-table restaurant from usually late June through Labor Day.
Well, it sounds like quite an area with quite a bit of variety.
And it is.
Whether you're a paddler or you're with somebody who is not a paddler, there's something for everybody to do.
There is. And there's some also lovely short hikes that are in the area, too.
Excellent. Where can someone learn more about the Leshanos?
A couple different options. There is the Leshano Chamber of Commerce. They do have a website that has some information on, you know, different restaurants, hotel lodging, rentals for cottages that can be rented and things like that. The St. Ignace Chamber of Commerce has a very, very good website that has a lot of information. And since St. Ignace is only about 30 minutes, we're kind of in the same county. So they also have a lot of good information and can answer questions. And then you can, of course, call, you know, Woods and Waters, either by email or phone calling us. And I love talking to people and helping, you know, kind of guide them to what it is that they're looking to do.
And where can someone learn more about Woods and Waters?
Woods and Waters, both plural, .eco, E-C-O.
All right. Well, we'll make sure we have links to Lachineau information as well as Woods and Water on the show notes for this episode.
All right. Well, thank you very much, John.
Sue, thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. I'm joined now by Aaron Gascoigne, and you may have heard Aaron's name or seen Aaron moderating posts on a Facebook group called Kayak Ontario. So, Aaron, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Kayak Ontario.
Oh, sure. Kayak Ontario, it started, I'm going to say, probably around 2014 as a trip log that I started on an Instagram account. It kind of grew, you know, some following. I didn't expect anyone to follow me. I was just using it as a way to log trips. And as Instagram kind of took off, so did the page. And I got the feedback almost right away that it was great, but there was just not enough information. So it expanded into a WordPress blog. And from there, you know, it expanded into a Facebook group, which kind of took off. And then, you know, the rest is history. It started doing trips and tours. And now we just opened our first store.
Yeah. So it went from a blog. Then you started the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. You had a kind of a meteoric rise of the Facebook group. So tell us about that and how that came about.
Honestly, it was a bit of an accident. It was a lot of an accident. It was started as a group of a couple of my friends, and the honest truth is that I just didn't know much about Facebook, so we started it as a way to post the trips that we wanted to take together, and there was about 12 of us at the time, maybe, and the idea was, if we're gonna organize a trip, we could post it there, and then we'll go.
Okay.
And honestly, if you go and look, you'll probably be able to find them still, way back in the beginning of when it opened. What I didn't think about or even realize is that they would invite their friends to do a trip I wasn't involved in. And then those people started inviting their friends to a trip that they weren't in. And then it kind of snowballed. So it was a bit of an accident, to be completely honest.
But a happy one from that. And you've grown to 30-something or 30-something thousand, if not more than that.
Yeah.
Committed users that are posting their trips and their activities and asking questions and learning.
Yeah, I mean, it's humbling to say the least. I mean, I hope it's a resource that people can ask a question, feel comfortable, feel safe to ask those questions that a new paddler might feel a little embarrassed about asking. We try to moderate it in a way that if they do ask the question, that they get the answer they need and not, you know, any sort of Facebook sass.
Yeah, it should be a place people are welcome to go and they want to go.
Yeah.
And that's the way that the group feels.
I hope so.
So now that then grew into coaching for you.
Again, a bit of a happy accident. I was a hockey coach my whole life, a Hockey Canada certified coach. I was completely and utterly done with coaching when I did the Facebook group. And, you know, I started taking some courses with Paddle Canada and got talked into an instructor course. And, you know, I don't know how it snowballed, but a couple friends said, you know, you took this course, do you want to run a course? And the rest is just like the group, it just took off. I didn't really do too much to do it. I just got in the right place at the right time, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so what's the depth of the classes that you run now and programs that you run now?
We're pretty much across the Paddle Canada in-classroom portion. We're still a pretty new company, but we're getting there slowly but surely. We can offer all of the courses that are available on the Great Lakes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're offering that depth of programming.
Yeah.
And you've opened a shop just recently, too.
We have.
So what inspired you to go to that route?
Again, we just realized there's not really a sea kayaking store in Southern Ontario. You know, there's lots of amazing kayak stores. A lot of them focus on whitewater. A lot of them focus on canoeing. And we had a lot of customers that asked us for gear. So it just kind of, again, we just put it together slowly but surely, one thing at a time. And one day woke up and said, we don't have enough room for all this gear anymore. And we needed to start looking for a shop. So it's really new. It's only been open for about 6 months. And, you know, it's already off to a good start.
That's great.
It's going good, yeah.
Now, what brands do you carry?
Oh, wow. So we have Werner, Astral, Kokatat, Valley, Rockpool, Gear Lab, Northwater. Just about all the major brands. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure I missed some. I'm sorry.
And you've recently started working with Joey Schott at Turning Point, too.
We have, yep. They're our newest account. we're selling the full line of Turning Point Bulwarks kayaks.
Now, are you doing some repair work for them as well, or with them? Or
We do some very minor repair work. He's actually working with us to train some of our younger instructors in repair. For now, we're focusing on selling their kayak line, though.
Okay. So if somebody wants to come and look at a Petrel Play, you've got one?
We currently have their demo models in our showroom, and we are in queue to receive 5 of them, actually.
Ah.
One very special one that's in production right now.
Oh.
But you might have to come and see it.
All right. Can you tell us anything about that one?
I can't because it's special and he hasn't told me yet.
Oh, so it is that special.
It's special. Yeah, it's one of the special Joey Shot Facebook post ones.
All right.
Yeah, it'll be special.
How can somebody learn more about Kayak Ontario and the programs that you offer, the trips, and the shop?
Okay, so, I mean, the easiest way would be just a Google search. If you Google Kayak Ontario, we come up quite easily on that. If you look up for us on Facebook, you can't miss us. We have the Facebook group. It'll come up pretty quickly. Our blog is still there, the original trip blog. It has, I think, 80-plus trip reports on there.
Okay. Is there a web address?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So shop.kayak-ontario.com.
We'll make sure we include links to that in the show notes. And
thank you.
Aaron, congratulations on really building a business. That's pretty inspiring that you've been able to take it from where it started as a trip blog to then growing through building that Facebook community, not just a page, but really building that Facebook community to then developing a coaching practice and then really drawing a lot of people in and making a difference for a lot of folks. And then now taking the next step towards the shop. So congratulations
Thank
on that.
And
thanks
much.
For your commitment.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, I'm joined now by Wesley Schlenker, and Wesley is with Naturally Superior Adventures. Welcome, Wesley.
Thank you for having me, John.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So tell us a little bit about Naturally Superior Adventures.
All right, Naturally Superior Adventures is a kayak guiding outfit on Lake Superior based out of Wawa, which is about 2/3 up the way on the east shore of the lake. We lead trips from border to border all over the North Shore, from Pigeon River on the west end, through the north, and then down to the west to St. Marie.
All right. So now for those of us who live relatively close here, you know, we know how special that area is. But for our listeners, tell us a little bit what makes that North Shore of Lake Superior so amazing.
Wow, there's a lot to go over on that end.
Lake much Superior, more than we can fit into this conversation, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Lake Superior is definitely a special place. We don't call it the Inland Sea for without credibility. In particular, what I find striking is the amount of just pure raw wilderness that exists there. It being relatively far north in Ontario, there is no whole lot of population, no infrastructure, and what that means is just pristine wilderness everywhere you look, which is a paddler's dream.
Let's kind of go north from where you are, and we'll go to an area called the Slate Islands. So tell us a little bit about the Slate Islands at the north, kind of the northeast corner, I guess you might say, of Lake Superior.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Slate Islands are a group of islands that were formed 400 million years ago in a pretty dramatic collision by an asteroid. It was probably about 30 kilometers in diameter, so big enough to knock out the dinosaurs had they been around at that time. And what we have as a result is this little speck of islands right out in the middle of the lake, ways offshore. You can paddle, the 10 kilometers, 15 kilometers, or you can get a boat shuttle out to the islands. And once you're there, in the interior of the island system, you're very sheltered. You move around day to day, enjoying the sights. Should you brave the exterior of the islands and whatever waves the lake may throw at you, you will certainly be rewarded with the views.
Okay, and there's a special herd that's out there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So you're talking about the woodland caribou, which normally you wouldn't find in Canada until you head north of the tree line in the Arctic Circle. However, there is a disjunct population found on the Slate Islands. Their numbers have been dwindling over the years as the wolves have pecked them off, but they remain there. I was there just last summer and heard them marching around my tent at night, and they definitely left evidence around the site.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Now, how many islands roughly are in the Slate Archipelago?
Oh, several dozen. It'd be too hard to count. Okay. There's two main big ones. Mortimer and Patterson are the two main islands, but there's a smattering of smaller ones, any size to like a football stadium down to the size of your kitchen pretty well.
And you can paddle from the mainland out to the islands?
You can, yeah. There's certainly, if you pick your day right, you know, wait for the wind to die down or hopefully there's no fog, you can absolutely closest point of approach would probably be 11 kilometers to the islands, although most people would leave from Terrace Bay, which would be closer to 15.
So not a bad paddle, then.
Not a bad paddle.
All right. So as we move from the Slates and their beauty, we move down toward the what's called the Pukasaw Coast. What is that?
And the Pukasaw Coast is a stretch of coastline, about 200 kilometers long, with virtually no human impact to be seen, which is quite remarkable. I don't know where else you find that much coastline just ready to be paddled. It's also a national park in Canada, so the idea is it's going to stay that way for quite some time. A lot of beauty there. Some of the most dramatic scenery I've ever seen. These huge, expansive rock peninsulas that have been washed clean by waves over the course of centuries, just kind of attesting to the power of the lake.
And then as we move through the Pukasaw coast, we get to another kind of special area, the Michipicoten Island.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's Michipicoten Island off the Pukasaw coast. Should you want to brave the 25-kilometer crossing to there, again, you'll certainly be rewarded. As you make our way south and leave the park, we kind of come to the Pukasaw Highlands, which are a gorgeous bit of crown land, which means you can camp there for free of charge, which, of course, is nice. And as we round the corner, we start to see the outflow of several rivers, including the Dog River. And should you decide to camp at the bottom of that, there's a 3-kilometer hike up to the spectacular Denison Falls, you know, over 100 feet of cascading water coming down. It's something to behold.
Wow, sounds beautiful. And then you make our way from there and you get to Naturally Superior Adventures Lodge.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So you got a decent complex there. So tell us a little bit about that complex.
Yeah. So it's about, you know, 3 days paddle from the mouth of the Dog River back to our main site at the mouth of the Michipicoten River, which is a nice lazy river. But we love it. We've got our lodge set up there, a couple of geodesic domes built down on the beach where you can really, really enjoy the view camping there in a bit more of a glamping style, we could say. And as a paddler, I particularly love the outflow of the Michipicoten River, because when the current meets the waves coming in off the lake, it's just a surfer's haven.
Sounds like a good time.
Absolutely.
Where can someone learn more about the area and learn more about Naturally Superior Adventures?
To learn more about Naturally Superior Adventures, definitely check out our website, naturallysuperior.com. We've got lots of info there about the various trips we offer, which are going to be filled with tidbits of information on the area, from the ecology to the human history and the acts of preservation that are being taken now. There's a lot of great reading resources in the area. The National Marine Conservation Area in particular is a book by some paddlers off the north coast there that have written there. Zach Krunis is one of them. Great information source there if you wanted to paddle the area.
All right. Well, Zach was a guest on the show previously.
Oh, so no kidding.
We'll make sure we have links out there to Naturally Superior. We'll make sure we have links to that book and then other resources as well. Leslie, thank you.
Thank you, John.
If you want to be a stronger and more efficient paddler, Power to the Paddle is packed with fitness guidance and complete descriptions, along with photos of more than 50 exercises to improve your abilities and enjoy your time on the water. The concept and exercises in this book have helped me become a better paddler, and they can make a difference for you too. The exercises in the book can help you reduce tension in your shoulders and low back, use the power of your torso to create leverage and use less energy with each stroke, use force generated from your lower body to make your paddling strokes more efficient, have the endurance to handle long days in the boat, drive through the toughest waves or whitewater, protect your body against common paddling injuries, and while you're at it, you might even lose a few pounds, and who wouldn't mind that? So visit paddlingexercises.com to get the book and companion DVD.
For those listeners from the U.S. Great Lakes region, I hope you learned something about a new place, an outfitter, or an event that you can attend. And if you're from somewhere else, I also hope you've learned another reason to visit the region that is home to 21% of the world's fresh water. We may not have ocean tides, but our Great Lakes are truly great. In the state of Michigan, you're never more than 6 miles from water and 85 miles from a Great Lake. Don't forget to check out onlineseakayaking.com. Take advantage of the great video lessons that James and Simon have put together. And enter the code PTBPODCAST at checkout and get 10% off just for being a member of the Paddling the Blue community. For our next episode, we're on the road to another longtime favorite event. Our next episode will come to you from Madison, Wisconsin, where we'll be recording from the P&H Piranha Kayaks booth at Canoocopia, the world's largest paddle sports expo. We'll be talking with paddlers, exhibitors, and share some of the newest and most interesting things from the show. Until next time, thanks again for listening, and I look forward to bringing you the next episode of Paddling the Blue.
Thank you for listening to Paddling the Blue. You can subscribe to Paddling the Blue on Apple Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Please take the time to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Music. We truly appreciate the support. And you can find the show notes for this episode and other episodes, along with replays of past episodes, contact information, and more at paddlingtheblue.com. Until next time, I hope you get out and paddle the blue.